like a lot of people in baseball, we spent a lot of the offseason wondering and worrying about how we were going to get pitchers through 162 games after a 60-game schedule, and whether we're going to have 8-man rotations or 6-man rotations, or like the Texas Rangers are doing, 2 tandem setups and everything like that. Every day I go online or on social media right now, I see another position player going down. I'm wondering if we underestimated the impact of last year on position players this year, or do you think that maybe this is teams being extra cautious right now? Because when I hear Aaron Judge out with general soreness after 5 games, my eyebrows kind of go up a bit.
Yeah, I mean, let me attack this in a couple of different ways, because one, I think first and foremost, to your one point about talking about the pitchers, how are we going to get them through it? I got some pretty good researchers here at my fingertips at MLB Network, and I went back and looked at the 81 strike shortened season and the innings pitched leaders in 81, and then I went and looked at 82, which was a completely full season after a shortened season. I think it was 110 games in the strike shortened season, so they added 50 to the till. And Steve Carlton led the innings pitch that year at 285 innings. And Nolan Ryan at age 35 was 13th on the list with 250 innings. Oof. So this unprecedented territory that we're in, I think, is fairly precedented. And I view it as the way these guys train and what they do, there's no reason in the world for me to think that these pitchers, your number one and your number two guy in your rotation, there's no reason to think they can't make 33 starts, and I'm just going to give them 6 innings. I'm not even going to beat them up. But if you do 33 at 6, that's 198, and I don't see a problem with that. Now, granted, I never stood on the bump and wasn't a big league pitcher, but I just don't quite understand all the negativeness and how are we going to do this? Oh, woe is us and everything else. They train, go out there and pitch. I'm not even asking them to do that much, but I expect some guys to throw 200 innings.
Hmm. Okay, Bill, I hear you all the time on the MLB Network talking about the shift, and I'm not a huge fan of the shift either. I don't think they can ban the shift. I don't think that's going to go over well with organizations, but I do think they can make adjustments to the shift. What adjustments do you think both sides would be happy with?
Well, I don't think there's any reason to do anything, personally. And I went back and looked at the number of overshifts that have happened year over year, and basically the batting average on the balls put in play, the new fancy term for BABIP, balls put in play, batting average balls put in play, has basically held true at about 297 year over year over year over year over year. And that tells me that, yes, the overshift may hurt a few big donkeys out there that refuse to give in to the system and say, I'm going to hit the ball the other way a couple times. But I go back and I look at Anthony Rizzo. It was like 2 years ago, I believe, I was on the desk at MLB Network. Rizzo comes up, the first at bat, they overshifted him. He bunted down the third baseline for a knock and got it. The next time up, they overshifted him, and he bunted down the third baseline for a knock and got it. The third time up, they played him straight up. They didn't play him in the overshift. So I think if the overshift does hurt certain guys, and I do believe it does hurt certain guys, but if it's taken 30 points off of one guy, it's given 10 other guys 3 points, or 6 other guys 5 points, because it's basically held true year over year. So now, granted, last year the BABIP went down in that pandemic shortened season. It went down by about 20 points. But the overall league-wide average, batting average, went down 20 points as well. So I'm going to call that a push, and there's a lot of things that happened in 2020. That I'm really not even going to count, but I went back and looked at when they started it, there was like 4,000 overshifts, and then it went up to about 60,000 overshifts, but the batting average on the balls put in play, the only thing that the shift can affect, remained the same. So I'm not so sure it necessarily works as well as people say it does, and I think you ought to just let this thing play out and see if hitters that do get hurt by it actually make an adjustment from time to time.
Yeah, it's interesting. You're the perfect guy to ask this. We have a guy here named Bo Bichette trying to play shortstop with not a tremendously strong arm. And everybody knows who your brother is in Cal Ripken, how good of a shortstop he was and the throws that he could make. If Cal was around Bo, do you think he would have any suggestions on how he could play the position a little bit better with that, you know, without a super strong arm?
Well, I think first and foremost, I think Bo's going to be fine at shortstop.
Yeah.
And I don't know how much advice that he would actually give him. The shortstop play, though, in this first week of the season, from what I've been watching, has not looked very crisp in a lot of different cities. And it's kind of making me scratch my head. And I think some of the things that Earl Weaver told Junior when Cal first went over to short, because he was a shortstop through the minor leagues until Double A. Mm-hmm. Then they made him a third baseman in Double A and Triple A. He got called up as a third baseman. But Earl Weaver's the one that said, no, this guy's going to play shortstop for me. He's going to be fine. And simple advice, simple instruction is, if you go into a hole and backhand a ball, I want you to catch it. I want to make sure you plant your feet, and I want you to throw it to the first baseman in the air. If the guy's safe, so be it. We have a double play ball in order, and that's fine. But if you catch a ball in the hole, hurry it, throw the ball in the stands, and that batter runner's now in second base, I'm going to have a problem with you. So, in essence, I think what Earl Weaver was trying to tell him, or was telling him, treat everything like it's important. Do your job in what you can do. Don't try to do more. And if it doesn't necessarily work out the way we want it right away, we can live to fight another day. But the idea and what my dad always told us when we were doing everything is treat every out like it's important. And I think if you go out there with a mentality of treating every out like it's important, like it was the 27th out in Game 7 of the World Series. If you do that on every play, you're going to be fine. And let's face it, a shortstop, a second baseman that has decent range has about 5 chances a night. So if you can't treat every chance that you get a night, 5 of them, like it's important, then maybe you shouldn't be out there playing.
Okay, you've set this up perfectly for me. With that, all of those things you just said on how important every out is, what do you think about the organizations that want all of these different guys to play all these different positions? Do you like it, and do you think it's fair for the player?
I do not like it, and it bothers me to no end. There's the terminology in the game, what is it, positional versatility. Okay, and I go, who cares? What I want is some donkeys. And I want donkeys to go out there and play every day in a certain spot. And then you do have guys that need to be utility players. But I use this terminology and this example a lot. When the Chicago Cubs won the World Series, that was Chris Bryant's year. He won the MVP as well. He played in about 40 games in left field, which I don't quite understand or fathom. My point is, Chris Bryant did not win the MVP of that season because he played 40 games in left field. He won the MVP because he raked and everybody recognized him as a third baseman. The Chicago Cubs, on their way to win the World Series, played 17 playoff games. They won 11 of them. That's how you win the World Series. Chris Bryant played third base every game in the playoffs in the postseason. So that'll tell me, and should tell everybody, that the Chicago Cubs even know where their best lineup is and what they need to do. So the idea of these guys having different gloves, I'm not buying in on it. I think if you have conviction as an organization and you say, okay, here's my squad, and then this is my guys that are going to fill in and give some guys days off, to your point, I don't think it's fair to players to make them go out there and play different positions on a nightly basis. You cannot put your best defensive team out on the field when you keep a revolving door out there with the defensive position.
Bill, it's interesting hearing you say that, because one of the conversations I had with Paul Quantrill when he was with the Blue Jays organization, of course, his son Cal is a pitcher, he talked about how young players have to learn the art of telling people to basically go bleep themselves. I'm not going to use the word. But he said, and my reaction was the same. He said, no, Jeff, that's an art form. You got to be able to tell a coach, hey, you know what? Versatility is great, but dude, have you seen me in left field? You know, right. And you do. You have to do that if you're a young player, don't you?
Well, I think you have to find a way to be able to do that. Now, Paul said it the typical old-fashioned way that an old-school baseball guy would say it. But you're right. It's not doing the team justice either. And look, when you look around at the teams that are successful, and let's go to the Dodgers. They won the World Series last year, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And the year before that, they almost got beat by Milwaukee Brewers. With all the stuff that they were doing with tinkering this, tinkering that. At one time when Milwaukee run a left-hander out there, they had Peterson, Muncy, and Bellinger sitting on the bench because of lefty-lefty matchup. That's about 100 homers that sat on the bench during the postseason. Now, they got through it, and I'll give them credit for that before the Nationals got rid of them. But the idea of having guys play, and if you look at the Dodgers last year, Muncy played every game in the playoffs at first base. Bellinger played every game in center field. They did tinker and kind of play with Jock Peterson, and I'm okay with certain tinkering, but the idea of this analytical approach of this guy hits 260 against this guy, and this guy only hits 257, I'm going to play the guy who hits 260. If you've got guys, you ride them, you figure out where your bench players get in there and play, but I don't think there's a big mystery going on what you need to do to go play the game of baseball and be successful.
Yeah, okay, this is a sort of a hard question maybe for you to answer, but if anybody can, you can, because, you know, you hang around with Sean Casey a lot. He's sort of a hitting expert. When I saw Fernando Tatis Jr. have the big finish and have the issue that he had with his shoulder, it got me thinking, and there's a lot of kids that listen to our show here and would like to, you know, maybe figure out the answer to this. What do you feel about the two-handed finish and the one-handed finish when you're hitting?
To me, that's a natural thing. That's a gift that you would have. You know, Casey did hurt his shoulder too, his right shoulder, which is his lead shoulder, similar to what Tatis is.
Yeah.
Now, Casey is different because Casey throws with his right arm, because he was a left-hand hitter and a right-hand thrower. But the idea of a follow-through, there's a terminology that we like to use in hitting when I talk to my brother, was controlled aggression. And sometimes we all get carried away and we get a little long at home plate. So I think either way, if the follow-through is a natural kind of gift that's kind of like innate in the person,
mm-hmm.
but if you stay in control and you have controlled aggression, you kind of tone that down a little bit. And I think a lot of young players, and Tatis falls into that category, sometimes they want to hit a ball 550 feet instead of 450 feet. And if they figure out that 450 feet is the home run in any ballpark that we play in, I think they're going to be okay with that. But the one hand, two hand doesn't really enter into my conversation, because I never even talk about follow-throughs when I talk to kids about hitting, because the follow-through is an after effect of everything that comes into play. And if a kid naturally has the gift of a one-hand follow-through, I wouldn't want to take anything naturally away from him by saying, hey, dude, you should keep both hands on the bat, because it may enter his mind in the wrong spot in the hitting sequence.
Bill, really good of you to do this today. Thanks so much. Terrific insight. Love your work and really appreciate your time.
Yeah, it's great stuff.
Now, on another note, are you boys ever going to get to watch your boys play?
Oh.
You went there.
Yeah.
No, I'm not going there in a bad way. I'm just sitting there watching the home opener in Dunedin, and I really appreciated and loved actually watching what the Blue Jay kids were able to do last year.
Yeah.
And it's kind of funny because half of them probably played in Buffalo the year before or have some time in there, so they were just kind of going with the flow. But I actually feel bad for you guys not being able to see some of the excitement that your young boys can put out there. I wasn't going anywhere
for
any specific reason. I'm just saying, as a baseball fan, I hope you guys get to watch these guys play.
I mean, I think optimistically a lot of people are hoping that maybe they'll be back here in September, whether or not there'll be a lot of people in the stands. But I think that's probably the best case scenario.
Fingers crossed.
I'm pulling for you guys. I want you guys to be able to see them, because there's some exciting young players that you guys have.